Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It would make more sense to not let being a member of one party get in the way. If you are independent, it just gives you a flexibility. And the more I thought about that, the more I think it felt right.
But that was then, when Mayor Bloomberg was considering running for president as an independent. Now he's running for a third term as mayor, and apparently being a party member doesn't get in the way, as he put it, quite so much. WNYC's Bob Henley has the scoop about the mayor seeking the endorsement of a certain organized political party. That's a hint, but we'll keep you in mild suspense about which one for just a minute. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein is also here to break down what New York might get in the stimulus bill now that it's got its final form, and how the mayor personally lobbied across party lines for it yesterday in D.C. Hi, Bob. Hi, Andrea.
Hi.
Hey, Brian.
Bob, which
Well, here's the thing. Drum roll, please. In point of fact, we have to get into, when you talk about election law, it's Dungeons and Dragons time, because the mayor technically will not have to become a member of the party. He needs to obtain what is called a Wilson-Pakula letter, which is from something in the 1940s, which is the permission granted by at least three of the five Republican chairs, backed up by their county committee, some 60, 70 people in each one of the boroughs.
That's from the five boroughs,
To let him run as a candidate in the Republican primary without deigning to be a member of the Republican Party. Because in point of fact, that ship sailed back in October. He would have had to have been a member October 10th as a Republican before the last election. The reason why this is done is so that you don't have raiding on parties, particularly on the smaller parties where you could have individuals, and it's happened, where a group of people don't like somebody and then they raid a party and show up all of a sudden and co-opt the party line. So this ensures at least that there be some ideological connection and authentic reality for each party.
So let's see. The history here is he wasn't a Republican, then he was a Republican, then he wasn't a Republican.
Actually, he was a Democrat, they say, historically. Then he became a Republican. Then he dropped that identification back in 2007 when he thought he had presidential ambitions.
For independence. Right. And now he's still not a Republican, but he's going to run on the Republican line.
This all remains
to be
seen.
If he can get these endorsements as you laid them out.
And it's an incredible turn of events when you think about it, because in the 2001 race, he was very clear that he was running on the Republican Party line for expediency reasons, which is to say he couldn't win in a crowded Democratic field.
As an unknown at that time.
From what we can tell about the thinking of his advisors, they think that winning a Democratic Party primary is still not a sure bet. So he has to turn to these other parties. But it's a very different city than it was in 2001. Then there was this Republican mayor, Giuliani. Of course, there was 9/11 and, all of that that happened in the course of the election. But, I mean, this is, probably one of the most indigo places on earth now. I believe something like approaching 80% of the city voted for Barack Obama.
Really,
it's
really,
a town
really
that, really became extraordinarily Democrat identified in the last 8 years. And, of course, Bush was just, even more unpopular than he was nationally.
Why can't he, especially with his money, run just as an independent? What Republican could actually go up against him on the Republican line and make any impact?
Well, Mr. Casamitidis is an actual authentic Republican. He's made some moves that appears to look like he's serious.
The owner of the D'Agostino's chain.
Exactly. And then also there's would be the independent option, the independent party. That is in kind of an implosion with the state and local at each other, so that line is in dissent. One of the problems is he runs as an independent, unaffiliated person. He, think of it as like a Chinese menu. You'll be way over by oranges and orange sherbet down at the bottom, because we get four or five people that run as independents irrespective of the party.
Right.
So he'd be down in this mix.
Line A, line B, line C.
Right, and the way the lines work is the A line is for the governor, the party of the governor in power, and then the major party, and then we have the Conservative Party, you have the Worker Family Party, and the Independence Party. Those are the ones that are, the so-called big-time parties.
But here, for the record, is a clip of the mayor on this program in 2007. I interviewed the mayor live with Greg David of Crane's New York Business at an event that we did together live on the show. Bloomberg had just become a registered independent at that time, and I asked him if there were specific things that he agreed with and disagreed with about what each party stands for.
I don't agree with your fundamental premise. I don't think that I disagree with what any national party stands for, because I don't think that either national party stands for anything. I think the people in those parties stand for things. There's just, there isn't that, come on, there isn't any philosophy for a party. When's the last time you saw the platform of either party be tracked out and say, oh, we said 3 years ago at our convention, this is what we stand for? Come on, get serious. That's just to give you something to write about in the middle of a boring convention. There's nothing else. There are people from the far left to the far right in both parties. There are people who I agree with on all of these issues, social issues that you mentioned, and on international issues. And if you want to find somebody in the party that you disagree with, easy to do. You want to find somebody you agree with, easy to do.
So
gives a whole new meaning to the term party rental. And that's what I got pushback from the Republican chairs. They do feel that he has dissed them very publicly. And at this point, the Republican Party, might sound counterintuitive, is feeling kind of feisty, actually. They're liberated from not having Pataki at the top of the ticket or a George Bush. And they had a good week pretty much on the floor of the Senate and House, getting back to basics about fiscal conservatism. So they were not in a mood. I think he's going to have a tough audition.
WNYC's Bob Henley, WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. And Andrea, here's another clip of the mayor, but this one is from just yesterday, reacting to the final version of the $789 billion stimulus bill agreed to by Congress. He's talking about all the cuts to the city public schools that he was saying he might have to make.
If the state legislature passes the governor's proposed budget, which took $770 million out of education in the city, I'm happy to report that I think we'll get enough money from Washington to make up for that.
So that's pretty good news. These 14,000 teacher layoffs, that they wouldn't have to come to pass because of the stimulus. He can already say that with confidence?
Well, I would say that it was a brave face moment, because as he was at LaGuardia saying this, the Senate and the House had actually yet to agree that they had agreed. The last time I checked, which was shortly before coming on air, there actually were no exact numbers. And one of the big mysteries for the city was whether the final bill would have a House formula for distributing education funds or a Senate formula for distributing education funds. And without getting too technical, the House one favored the New York City. It favored districts with more poor schools. So there was actually some $400 million difference. And last time I checked, the city actually just didn't know. I mean, yesterday was such a dramatic day, because Bloomberg went down to Washington with Randy Weingarten to lobby for education funding, for school construction funding. And he had a whole schedule set up, including a meeting with Arlene Specter at 4 o'clock. Well, as we know, Senator Harry Reid stepped out at 3 o'clock to say a deal had been done, to the surprise, it seemed, even of Nancy Pelosi.
That was a bizarre moment. I happened to be watching it on television.
Certainly, right.
It was where's Nancy?
Right, where's
I thought this was a two-house agreement. Oh, right. Not yet? Oh, right. We're still hammering out details?
Right, and everybody reported there's
Thanks,
a deal.
Harry.
Then they were like, there's no deal. But it seems that even to the surprise of the mayor, and, you know, it does look like this was an effort to sort of, you know, Bigfoot the House, get the Senate version, which, you know, because it has the Senate version, has, I think the total number is 42% tax cuts. That's a big chunk of tax cuts. And all this other spending that the mayors and the governors were hoping for got crowded out. So, you know, Mayor Bloomberg wants a stimulus bill. He wants some of the money. Clearly, he wanted more money than the city will end up getting, even though yesterday he was like, well, tax cuts are great for the city.
There was some, from what I saw when the smoke cleared this morning, there was some sign that in the conference, the Individuals with Disability Education Act did see some additional money. That's good news for cities, particularly because special needs children are very expensive to educate, and that's something the city's been having trouble with. But in general, Andrea's right. We still really don't know how it's worked out, even in terms of the number of police officers we're getting, because, you know, one version and the House version is more generous to the city, doesn't require the city to match the money. The Senate version does. So we have to actually literally go over all the small print and compare to see how the legislation came out, you know, each verb, each noun.
So if Mayor Bloomberg had access yesterday, meeting scheduled with Nancy Pelosi and Arlene Specter, which is what you were reporting, Andrew, right?
Well, he had a meeting on his schedule with Arlene Specter. There apparently, from what the reports I'm getting, was a meeting in formation with Speaker Pelosi and a number of local officials that didn't happen.
But these were the top people here, because basically at the end of the day, it was Pelosi bargaining against Arlen Specter, Susan Collins, and Olympia Snow.
And the White House was involved, too.
Somewhat. But maybe, you know, the mayor's famous independence, though leaning maybe slightly toward Republican affiliation, helped him with this access across the aisle to all the power brokers. Bob, that possible?
Well, I think what helped him was, listen, what is budgeting? It's managing expectations. And he certainly got people's attention with the 14,000, 15,000 education slots he was talking about cutting. So anything short of that, and I remember here there was skepticism within the newsroom about when that number first came out. It's all kabuki theater. So what he really had to do is set expectations so low, make things so dire, that anything that he comes back with, it's short of that, is a victory.
Yeah, but I think that mayors and governors, by yesterday, everybody was exhausted. There were some people that looked like they were about to be in tears, you know, sort of tears of exhaustion, frustration. You can hear sort of in the mayor's tone that he was tired, too. I mean, but clearly, city and state governments did not come out with the sort of, you know, money that at one point they had hoped they would get. I mean, there's a mirage quality to this stimulus bill, which is to say, you know, the state, the governors and the mayors were in the desert and they thought they saw the oasis and there it was and it was going to help them out. And then when they got there, it wasn't all they expected.
And actually, you know, to this point, Andrea's spot on here, because Geithner's presentation actually was far more relevant to cities and states. It shifted.
Especially New York.
Access to capital. But I'm talking about, for years, cities, counties, and states have been crowded out of the money markets by these highly speculative concerns. And all they were simply asking for is to cut in line at the Treasury to pay the public employees. And they still aren't getting a clear answer about the ability to get access to capital. One of the things that's not being talked about is every county, city, state, any place with a post office has a huge pension problem, Brian. This makes what's going on now look like nothing. They have unfunded, vast billions and billions of dollars of unfunded pensions. And as the market declines, it gets worse. So to some degree, we might say that the federal government was really not responsive. I think Andrea's right.
WNYC, WNYC.org. Brian Lehrer with you with WNYC's Bob Henley and Andrea Bernstein on the potential impact of the stimulus bill for our area now that it's been finalized in Congress. And also Bob's scoop that Republican county chairs in the various boroughs have been approached by Mayor Bloomberg's people.
Say they don't want to say which word.
What's
they're just
going
to be in a meeting February 25th.
There's
he's
going to
have his
meeting.
Tap shoes on. That's all we know.
Hasn't been approached yet. Okay, tap shoes.
Depends what you mean by approach.
I'm not going to parse it any further than that. But Andrea, I see that Governor Patterson is setting up a special Recovery Act cabinet to deal with this influx of money, including a stimulus czar who he has appointed. What's that all about?
Right. It's a cast of thousands, maybe not a director yet. There is a Tim Gilchrist, who is the deputy secretary to the governor, which is a special advisor to Patterson, has been put in charge of this cabinet. Governor Patterson is calling it, which is going to consist of 28 agencies and authorities, you know, from the MTA to the Division of Cybersecurity and every other authority in between that you can think of, to making decisions about how to spend this money.
Oh, my God. The stimulus money,
right.
Spending decisions are going to be made by a consortium of 28 agencies?
Yeah, exactly. And I asked repeatedly. Tim Gilchrist had a conference call with reporters the other day, Tuesday, when it was announced. What's this, Thursday? It feels like a uni-week because it's just sort of in, you know, around the clock work.
Perma-week.
Talked to the deputy press secretary, and I asked, you know, repeatedly, has the governor given the direction for how this money should be spent? Which is to say, you know, there are there's restrictions. There's federal funding formulas. The federal government says you have to do things in X, Y, and Z way. But, you know, what does Patterson want to come out of it? Does he want greener projects? Does he want more geographic distribution of projects? And, you know, all that they could say to us is, well, it has to be for the good of New York State. But so far, Patterson hasn't put his own screen on it. So it's very, very unclear, you know, what the criteria are going to be. And, you know, these agencies and authorities, especially the authorities, as Bob has been saying, are not used to operating with a lot of scrutiny and accountability. So it's something certainly to watch, and we will be.
One of the things that is, you know, Jonathan Alter's fabulous book about the first 100 days of Roosevelt, contrasting that, one of the things that's cropped up since our last great financial travail is a growth of independent utilities and authorities. You know, we went through the period of Reagan-Thatcher where business, great, government, bad. Let's create things that are more business-oriented, independent of government. Now we realize business is bad, government good. Meanwhile, I have this architecture of dozens of organizations.
Some people.
And so you don't have a Harry Hopkins going around with a clipboard and his supporters feeding back to the Obama administration, like the W Works Products Administration, this needs to be done. There's this whole layer of Byzantine organizations that are get in the way of this spending of this money effectively, and often can be points of corruption. The whole pay-to-play phenomenon. If you go, you could drive me anywhere in the country, Utah. Who's taking away the garbage? Who's bringing you the water? It's probably an independent utility and authority that becomes part of pay-to-play. So that's the problem here, is that the Obama folks have not been able to reform the way we spend money at the same time as authorizing it. And that's the problem.
So in the meantime, just mail your good causes and special pleadings to Timothy Gilchrist, Albany, New York, 12203.
That is what they said. They said, you know, localities, you know, tell us what you want, you know, and we'll try to help you get information. I mean, one of the ironies is that when Mayor Bloomberg came back yesterday, he had his press conference in the 1930s WPA era Marine Air Terminal at LaGuardia Airport. And it was a sort of visual reminder of, you know, sort of the WPA was all about, you know, building things, in some cases, beautiful things. This stimulus bill so far doesn't look very pretty. Now, the pushback is we needed something fast, but it looks like a pretty ugly beast at this point.
We're almost out of time. How do we do on transit infrastructure?
Oh, well, the transit, talk about tears. I mean, there were many tears shed yesterday by the transit lobbyists. I was speaking to one from NRDC yesterday. He said, you know, this does not in any way reflect a green priority because the highway funding pretty well lasted. I think it was turned out to be $29 billion. And the initial suggestion had been $30 billion. So very little was cut from that. But there did look like there was a point coming out of the House bill that transit might get as much as $12 billion, which is still obviously only a little over 1%. $8.4 billion was the looks like the amount that was agreed on. Very little money for Amtrak.
That's nationally.
Less than $1 billion. That's nationally. Wow. You know, sort of what cities are actually going to get was not applauded. And one of the things that these transit advocates were really trying to do was change the proportions so that transit would be a bigger proportion of transportation spending. And they did not get that.
That
and there's a lot of disappointment.
Does that mean son of stimulus, like son of TARP, that because so much is left on the table that they'll come back for another?
Well, there's some big authorizations to happen. This year there's what the sort of environmentalists are trying to call the Green Tea Bill, which is the transportation authorization bill. And that will include more money for highways, more money for transit. But they were hoping was this would set the framework for what should be in it, and they feel like, from their point of view, it did not.
And they'll need lots of green tea for the perma-day negotiations yet to come to try to get us out of this economic mess. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein on the Shovel Watch. WNYC's Bob Henley on the Tap Shoes Watch. Thank you both very much.
That's our new website.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, the recession through the eyes of psychotherapists. And those of you in psychotherapy, and we want psychotherapists, practicing psychotherapists who are seeing the recession reflected in the demands on your practice, to call us right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We are looking for psychotherapists. Tell us what kinds of problems people are presenting with, and hopefully this will help our other listeners. Stay with us.